On the African space policy, we discussed it before the meeting. You know, it's of our interest. There were questions also on how it's going to be implemented. One aspect of that is how do we build capacity and capacity building, and Ms. DiPippo told us that capacity building will be one of the priority of CUPAS over the next few years. Do you already have any plans or a strategy on how capacity building for that policy will be able to build on these dozens or hundreds of other initiatives that exist at the national level, at the regional level in Africa, on space application, but also on how to access those applications?
Thank you, Mr. Luc. it's quite correct. The ability to implement the space policy and strategy is, of course, going to strongly depend upon, you know, what capacity is really leveraged. That means that ensuring that we know what's on the ground, and based on the projection of what we want to really achieve, determine the gaps for today and, of course, for the future. As I already mentioned, our go-to for really capacity, both human and institutional, will heavily depend on the existing system. And we have the Pan-African University. It is, you know, the first one we'll be going to. But we also depend on the partnership that exists. And of course, we will be very much interested in knowing what, for example, has mentioned this morning by you and Copios on the plan to probably revitalize the capacity building program, how we can really have a win-win partnership to really contribute into our objective. Of course, and I have already mentioned the issue of capacity building in space is very much complex, particularly for newcomers. So we have to also take that into consideration, because as much as we want to ensure that we have both institutional and human capacity, we want to ensure that they really address our need very well. It's capacity that, particularly human capacity, you want to ensure that you are building them to really use them rather than, you know, building capacity for the sake of building it. So these are some of the considerations we will be taking into account. And of course, we are open to all type of cooperation that, you know, will allow us to achieve that.
Gentleman sitting next to your left is running quite a lot of programs in Africa also, so that's an opportunity to to discuss. To Andreas and also maybe to Edith together, you showed us a very interesting system, and maybe we're left on with the impression that you're happy with it, that you have everything you need, and that's perfect. I'm sure it's not the case. Can you both, because you talked, Andreas, about early warning systems, for example, of environmental issues or disaster management issues, but there are also social crises that I'm sure you're keeping track of. What is missing? What are the, let's say, I don't know, one, two, or three main data sets that are not good enough for you, or that you need at a different scale to interact, and that you would like to maybe to discuss and eventually develop partnerships around?
We briefly had yesterday the discussion about migration and also that we have to follow a large number of peoples on the move. I think there the use of drones, for example, or unmanned aerial vehicles, as we call them, is an option. But what is missing when you, and I would maybe for data sets, Edith can give you an answer, but what is missing from our side, from the NGO side, is also more investment in human resources and in research and development. It's not that we always have to point out what we need from the others. It's we need to do more homework on our side. But the difficulties we face, and that was from the beginning when I first approached my president, the former NGO I worked with, for one of the programs, was that he said, Andreas, how can we explain that you dumped 50,000 euros for a science fiction program nobody understands and what has no impact? I mean, with innovation, with research and development, failure is an option. How do you explain to a donor who gives you 10 euros every 3 months to save lives that you invested in something which has no impact for the beneficiaries? So, and again, we have far too less experts on the technology side. This is what, in my experience, I went to Professor Wagner, Professor Zeil, Professor Lang with a problem, and they explained to me what's available in terms of technology and what we could apply. But we have far too less experts on our side who are monitoring what we're doing and what gaps we have, what needs we have, and then come up with a technological solution.
It's always dangerous to ask us what else we want. We always want more. A huge problem for us is time, to get access to data in time and to get the full data. So shutter control is not our friend. High resolution data is needed, and but also we have to think on how to cover areas where a lot of people are moving in urban areas. And for this, a lot of research is going on. We're doing with our partners like ZGIS. But I think it comes back to data availability for NGOs and timing. And another thing what would be nice to have is also access to radar data. Because another enemy is rain time and clouds. And a lot of things are happening during rain time or just at the beginning of rain time. And if you want to make a follow-up, sorry, it's rain time, we can't see. So I think radar data is something which would be very useful. But again, a lot of work is already done and must be done in future. And human resources, of course, and pricing.
Something to add on these different issues or questions?
In fact, maybe I just come to the point you mentioned in terms of data access and availability. I'm sure you know the Copernicus program, which is providing Sentinel data. They are for free. There's a free and open data policy, completely easily accessible via internet. You just need a user account and you can download all the data you require. There are radar data, optical data, altimetry data in the future. So this is really a very, I would say, rich data set. And in fact, the Copernicus system with the Sentinels is, I would say, when built up, the world's most comprehensive Earth observation system in the world. It does not have the very high resolution. You may require, in some cases, the resolutions go down to 10 meter for radar and for optical. However, in many applications of a larger scale, they are perfect, and especially if they are available very quickly. I mean, today we are producing roughly 6 terabytes of data per day, which are all available openly, and we have an open data portal, so users register. Today we have 46,000 users registered from 0 2 years ago. So this is going very fast, and these user communities are really across the whole domain, globally, researchers, businesses, NGOs, all kind of even private people who just want a satellite image of their backyard. So the availability, I think, is certainly at least on this type of data of 10 meters and above has been improving and is improving very, very fast. So I think there, this is good news. We also work quite well, actually, with both of your organizations, SOS Kinderdorf and also MSF, where we had projects already many, many years ago to demonstrate the usefulness. So I think there is progress made. Of course, when you say shutter control, you mean data below 1 meter, assume. And this is something which is a very commercial segment, which ESA, for example, is not covering at this point of time.
I will open the opportunity for questions from the floor, questions, comments, clarification, maybe. Here also, Director Totor, please.
Thank you very much. I would like to ask one question to Mr. Ashbahar, because yesterday we had a presentation where it was made reference to a partnership that between USAID and NASA for a number of objectives. I will not recap here. Does ESA has any kind of partnership of that kind with NGOs or actors in the field? And is ESA, I would say, mandated by its member states for all its activities for sustainable development with a dedicated budget? And if not, would you deem it useful to get?
Okay, that's a number of questions. Let's go one by one. USAID, we're not working with USAID as a partner because being an American organization, but we do work with equivalent European counterparts. I remember we have quite a few projects with GTZ, for example, the German Technische Zusammenarbeit, aid organization, which is having a very similar mandate. There may be more, but I don't recall them. So in principle, yes, we do that. We have, in fact, also with other NGOs initiated projects. It's one of the domains which we are addressing, especially in the data exploitation part. We are planning, and I'm putting some budget into our coming proposal for the ministerial conference in December to work on sustainable development in particular, either through the World Bank or with the World Bank, and then of course partners in the various countries, or directly with partners. So there is there's more activities planned, and it is certainly within our mandate, coming to another question you raised, that we do work very closely with these organizations because the core mandate is to develop space in general across Europe and worldwide, and to ensure that these data are as widely available as possible for every purpose, commercial, scientific, humanitarian, for societal benefits. And yes, this is certainly something we foster and we would like actually to strengthen.
Is this? I think this is quite a unique panel because we have two people from international organizations and unions, and then others who are doing on the ground work with a global footprint at the same time. So my question is a hypothetical one for all of you, for which you may have different answers. If I were a country government dealing with a refugee crisis, who do you think has the comparative advantage to be the one to identify to me that there may be opportunities to use Earth observation data? And then secondly, after having recognized the fact that that could be useful, what is the first step for me? Where do I go?
I didn't get the question, I have to be honest. So if you talk about a country where there are refugee crises.
Correct, so I'm a government, and I know that there's a refugee crisis, but I don't know what to do with it. What organization or entity would be best placed to be able to identify for me for the first time that there could be Earth observation data that could help me with this crisis? And then secondly, after having identified that there could be opportunities there, who is actually best placed to then help me with that? What is my first step?
Okay. It's seldomly that you would hear that, but we would just say...
I can also take it in part. putting my hat of my previous job at UNHCR, there are different agencies in different areas with different mandates, depending on the type of displacement. If it's refugees, meaning crossing a border, if it's internally displaced, there are national authorities in most of the member states of these agencies also, that have, so there are authorities existing. So it should not be a question if there's a problem. Those agencies will already be knocking at your doors, and very often before the problems occur. So this structure, then it becomes also a bit of an issue of mandate, who has the authority, who has the means. So there is an international coordination, there are different mandates, everybody running after the same money. So that's where it gets complicated.
Maybe I can just add one element from the, I would say from the Earth observation point of view. Many of these crises that lead to refugees or even conflicts are having at the origin something to do with the resources on the planet. It's either food, it is water, pollution in general, sometimes chemical pollutions and so on. So sometimes it's purely political, and then of course there's a different nature. But when it is an environmental crisis, of course these ones you can monitor extremely well from Earth observation. You can provide early indications, early warnings to various organizations, either national or international, and say, look, there's a drought coming up. This year the harvest of certain crops will be much lower than in other years. What can be done in order to alleviate the pressure, in order to avoid, say, a big crisis of humanitarian nature, either by other planning, by importing food or whatever can be done. So to really come at a very early stage in the process and try to avoid crisis to happen, of course, not always possible, but at least as much as you can.
Yes, there are initiatives that exist. I can refer to one in our office where we work with government in Central America and with a government body that is an intergovernmental body existing for Central America, and we're working with them at developing the capacities to access space-based information for drought monitoring in the dry corridor of Central America. So we bring together 6-7 countries developing their capacity. So these entities have a role at the regional level and at the national level. Very often they're part of their disaster risk reduction or disaster management strategies. So working at the level of not only central or federal governments, but also some national level also is very important. It probably doesn't happen everywhere. We're trying now with different partners to bring that strategy on drought monitoring and drought early warning from our experience in Central America and bring it at the global level with other initiatives that exist. So there are connections, but they're not always easy to find. Sure. Any other questions, comments? Yes, at the back, please. Again, if you can introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. My name is Elizabeth Veit from SB, and I just wanted to follow up on a theme that's come up a little bit in this last question and during the presentations, which is duplication and coordination. This is also addressed to all speakers again, which is we've seen there has been some duplication. Is this a problem? Is there a need for coordination? And if the answer to that is yes, then what do the respective organizations represented here need in terms of coordination, and what can they offer as well?
Any comment? Maybe GI-18 is a good example.
Maybe I start very briefly on the Earth observation part. One of the slides which I showed before was mentioning some of these coordination mechanisms that exist. GEO, GI-18, in fact, is the one that was highlighted, but also CEOS on the space agencies part, where all the space agencies worldwide meet regularly in working groups, in task forces, but then at plenary level, the level of heads of space agencies or those responsible for Earth observation, to really coordinate actions and at the end even define satellite missions that are in a coordinated way addressing certain aspects, whether this is land, atmosphere monitoring, and so on. And one of the domains was mentioned before, which is carbon dioxide in the context of COP21, where we have, a need for a better capacity to monitor carbon dioxide for climate studies, but also other activities. And there is a very intense debate ongoing to establish a global system to monitor CO2 much better, to better understand, first of all, the values, and then, of course, the impact and the the impact of this greenhouse gas on climate change?
I believe the problem of coordination has been increased to the coordination of coordinations. This is becoming critical now. For example, many agencies, European space agencies and national agencies, are developing and planning constellation of satellites. We're talking now of constellation of satellites, not only Earth observation, but global navigation system, telecommunication. So we're trying as an office also to start, how can we coordinate these different constellations to make sure that, of course, reduce duplication, but also go towards a global coverage of these systems, increase an access to data so that for every disaster, and not only the 30 or 40 activation of the space charter, but the hundreds of disasters are covered and serviced. So there's a bigger level of complexity of coordination. Other question? Yes, at the back, please.
Thank you. Maktoum from International Space University. I actually have two questions. The first one is for Mahma. 3 months ago, we had a space policy panel from NASA director. So as per him, the strategy for NASA is to have a satellite constellation, a launch vehicle built from Nigeria, and then a Nigerian astronaut. Like, in your roadmap, I saw only the constellation of satellite. Will European, African Union will adopt these two also? And then the second question is for ESA's Earth Observation Director. My question is from ESA's General Director's speech from yesterday's panel in England. So from his speech, I took three main points. The first one is he wants to see united space for Europe. Like, I want to know how it is different from ESA. And the second one is like space 4.0, which is making space accessible for everyone. And the third one is to make ESA more flexible. Like, is there any policy changes that is happening right now inside ESA? Like, is there anything that you can say from that?
Excuse me, can you repeat the question, because I didn't get the last part.
Okay, sorry. My question is, the NASA strategy is to have an Earth observation constellation, in-house built launch vehicle from Nigeria, and then a Nigerian astronaut in the roadmap. But in your roadmap, only the constellation of satellite was there. The other two were missing. Is there any change happened in the past 3 months? Or that's my question.
Okay, thank you. Well, of course, Nigeria has their own policy. And what I presented is, you know, the African policy overall. So the timeline that the Nigerian Agency for Space Research and Development may be very different, and in fact is different from the one that the continental one is providing for. That does not necessarily mean that they are contradictory. I suspect that probably it's in the implementation when the roles will be shared, because I talked about all these different platforms, and different countries may be coming into this different platform, and synergy will be built up, because most of what is going to be done will be done, of course, at country level. So it's not necessarily contradictory. It's just that in the implementation of the continental one, we need to really try to build on the synergy that exists at with national space agency, which basically will be contributing into the implementation of the continental policy.
I see that you're extremely well informed of what our DG is planning and what is ongoing. It actually is a very intense debate at the level of our member states and with our stakeholders. So coming to your point, Space 4.0, yes, that is one of the major headlines of reorientation of ESA. basically meaning that you are integrating all levels of activities which we are doing in ESA as a space agency with other domains. I've shown actually a few of them in my slides, that you integrate Earth observation data with the big data analytics domain, so to process huge amounts of data making use of the ICT revolution, that you display some of these results on iPhones, on tablets, so really make it accessible to users, and of course to combine different types of information from space and non-space in order to come to, I would say, information that is relevant for citizens. I think this is a bit, in a simplified way, summarizing this Space 4.0 approach. Then we have United Space in Europe, which is also one of the major lines, which aims at better integrating, coordinating, if I may say, the various assets which we have across Europe in the space domain. This again is not only Earth observation, this is really all domains. But if I take Earth observation as an example, you have been talking of radar data, very high resolution. We know that there are two countries with an excellent capability in Europe, Italy and Germany, TerraSAR and Cosmos SkyMed, which of course should be integrated and used, although they are national capacities, but they should be integrated and used together with our radar data on Sentinel-1 and of course other radar data as they are available. So this is one example of where we integrate capacities, harmonize them better, and make sure that a user has a much better access to some of these capacities. And maybe at some point this coordination may even lead to a planning, a better planning maybe, of the existing financial resources in the various places, ESA and member states. And your last point was really about the modernization part of ESA. Yes, of course, these two first elements go together with an internal rejuvenation or modernization aspect of ESA, which is mostly on processes, decision mechanisms, simplification of red tape and so on, which of course goes hand in hand with making it more efficient and more useful and using in a better way taxpayers' money for which is given to us.
I would take one last question, please.
Yeah, that's me again. Complementing from what Joseph said, in fact, concerning sustainable development, we have a dream that is proposed something like a coordination platform where all actors that present something, that do something that could support sustainable development can put together the information on what they are doing so that it is easily accessible from all. Instead of trying to find out if, by the way, ESA is doing something in an area, if NASA is doing something, if Copernicus Services is doing something, and so on, to have one place where you will see the catalog, let's say, of all sustainable development activities and how to contact the people and what is behind. This is something we started to discuss with our member states. It's still so I have the task to do this catalog for ESA to give an idea of what it could be. But it is really what we think is that there are so many initiatives everywhere that it would be a loss of time for the one that needs something to try to find out. And at the same time, it would help those who need something to express their needs. In case nobody is providing any answer, then they can start discussion for the future program. So this is an idea. This is something we have.
Thank you. And it could be taken as a conclusion, and I was going in the same direction a little bit, bringing the discussion back to sustainable development and this Agenda 2030. We saw at least two initiatives trying to map applications of Earth observation or space technologies in relation to the SDGs and going down even to level of indicators. And believe me, I've seen at least 7 or 8 other initiatives doing the same thing. And of course, the mapping is always different, okay? We hear on climate change that more than half of the climate change variable are measurable, are measured only by remote sensing. We're talking to home crowds very often, and it's the case here, and we can tap ourselves in the back and say we're useful, we have catalogs and catalogs of solutions and they're available. If we look at the SDGs and who is managing the SDGs and measuring the progress and will be reporting on the progress of the SDGs at the national level, those are the statistical authorities. And most countries' statistical authorities are far from being sensitized to the benefit of space technologies and Earth observation. There's a lot of work to be done there. And we have to be present on these international platform, on these working group looking at terminology and indicators. And believe me, that's probably the most boring part of my job, certainly in the disaster risk reduction environment. We have to promote and convince the UN agencies who are managing those intergovernmental bodies before we can get two lines of text in any declaration or anything, and that is critical. So providing solutions is still, I think, in a lot in the demonstration base, project base, and it's a lot of awareness raising. I know our office is doing that, and others are obviously doing that. But we are working on maybe broader, longer-term ideas on how to do that. But it is a very big challenge, and I think we individually, each agencies, each group, each communities like CIOS and GEO has to go beyond this tapping in the back. We have to start working with countries and providing solutions and get them convinced and users.